Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Around the Kid, Drum Talk Radio. Here is your host, Joe Ganzes.
Hey guys, welcome back. Another installment of Around the Kid, Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Ganzes. And for the next 2 hours, we'll be talking drums, drums, drums. And if that's not enough, drum some more. Guys, welcome. We are back. Whenever we do the show, we are pumped. Pumped. Today is show 230 in the history, Kid Drum Talk Radio. We started on December 6, 2015, and we're in our eighth calendar year, show 230. We are proud of all 229 shows to date and moving forward. We welcome you to a live show today, Sunday, February. Let's do that again. Mistakes are part of the process. March 20th, 2022. you gotta love live radio. Show 230, but I want to start off on a somber note. I want to dedicate tonight's show to a great human being that we lost this week in the world of drumming, a great husband, one of the greatest drum techs we've ever seen. He has teched for great bands over the last 40 years. And for the last 20 years, he has sat behind Todd Zuckerman every night to make sure Todd's drums were always pristine and sounded great. Tonight's show is dedicated to the late, great Paul Carrizo, a friend of the show. He was on show 70, Paul Carrizo, on the Drum Tech show. So today is dedicated to the life of Paul Carrizo. We are live, 563-999-3029. Why are we so pumped up? We've had greats. We've had living legends. We've had some of the best of all time. And tonight we spare no expense. For 40 years, he's been on the throne. Probably, you have to say, top 10 bands in the last 40 years of any genre. Iron Maiden, the living legend, Nico McBrain, will be with us at 8:30 tonight. We are so pumped. Oh, man, I go back to the first album and Killers and Number the Beast. I'm a huge Clive Burke guy. God rest his soul. And when Nico came on, it just took it was a different animal, a little different playing style. If you're a Maiden guy like me, Clive Burke was the master of the hi-hat. Great right hand on the hi-hat, those 16s and 32 notes on the hi-hats. And then Nico was pretty much the opposite. Still, he loved that ride cymbal. So, you know, two different flavors in Maiden, two all-time greats. We get to pick the brain of one of my favorites today, Nico McBrain, 8:30. At about 9:30, 9:40, we have an excellent drummer, a Facebook friend, Gene Novacek, will be joining us. We'll talk to him about his life and love for drums, but we're just pumped up for Nico McBrain. We are live, 563-999-3029. And when I think about Nico, I remember putting on Peace of Mind, which happens to be my favorite album. You hear it was there, my friend Tommy Florio's house on Highland Boulevard, and we played the album. This is before compact disc, and we just remember that Where Eagles Dare intro. It was just awesome. We're just pumped up. We're going to talk about so many different facets with Nico's career tonight. He's going to have a big birthday this year, a big number, and he's still going strong. Just pumped for the show. Let's play our main sponsor right now and give them some love, the great Sentent Cymbals.
Around the Kid is sponsored by Sentent Cymbals. Sentent Cymbals is quickly becoming the choice for drummers worldwide. With their roots going back to the emperors of the Qing Dynasty, Sentent blends the best of old world know-how with modern techniques to help all drummers find the best fit for them. Whether you're an avid drumming enthusiast or touring professional, Sentent has the perfect combination of products, pricing, and service to fit any drummer's needs. Contact them today to find out what the drum love is really all about. Sentent Cymbals. Forge your sound. And now, back to Around the Kid with Joe Ganzes.
We are back, 563-999-3029, show number 230 tonight on Around the Kid. I've invited a great, great drummer. We've had some great chats over the last 7 years. He's probably been on the show a couple of times. Just a great drummer, and he's a big Maiden fan, a big Nico fan. It gives me great pleasure to welcome back the tremendous Lee Kelly. Lee Joe Ganzes, Around the Kid. What's up, brother?
Hey, my friend. How are you? Can you hear me okay? I've got the AirPods going on, so is it working?
How you doing, Lee? How you been? Doing, bro?
I'm great, man. How about you?
Oh, we're just pumped up doing the show, man. I just wanted to have you come on because we've talked off the air over several years, and I know you're a big Nico guy. First of all, how you doing, bro? You still with Williams Jr.?
Yes, I am. Going into my third year with Hank, and we have about 20 or 25 shows on the books. I'm going to be putting the kit back together, the same kit I've used the last several years, the Yamaha Tour Custom Kit with Sabian cymbals. putting that back together. We'll do a couple days of rehearsal, and then we'll go out and, you know, get it happening again, man. Looking forward to making the noise again.
Great Lee Kelly, just a tremendous drummer. 563-999-3029. I have this guy coming on today. You might have heard of him. His name is Nico McBrain from a band Iron Maiden. When you think about Nico, and he's been in Iron Maiden 40 years this year, when you think about his catalog and his style, what comes to mind, Lee Kelly?
Oh, man, can you hear me? I had to switch the speakerphone because I could, you're coming a little weird on the air. Can you hear me okay? Everything good?
Oh, we're good. We're good.
Okay, cool. Man, the thing that rings in my mind about Nico is the first time I heard Peace of Mind and my jaw hit the floor. I mean, what a statement for a guy coming in, taking over for the original guy, and just it hits you like a brick wall. And
if
then
you,
my
if you,
when, go ahead.
That I'm a huge Maiden fan, and that is my favorite Iron Maiden now, Peace of Mind. I love all the songs, and you're right. That album took on a piece of history by itself. The great drum sound, those big sonars, those big peisty cymbals. Oh, man, I just remember hearing Where Eagles Dare and that beginning lick and just saying, who is this guy, you know?
Yeah, exactly, man. He like, took it to a whole nother level, and I'm sure Steve Harris was not, you know, upset with that at all, being the band leader that he is. And then following on with Power Slave, I do remember being, you know, what, 14, 15, and them coming around live, my parents or my mom specifically going, you're not going to go see them because you saw the album cover. It was one of those bands.
Right, right.
And I'm like,
yeah,
I'm like, they're singing about like history and mythology and stuff. And she's like, nope. But I did. I have finally seen Nico. I think the last two tours, especially the last one where he had the stained glass kit.
Yes.
And fortunately enough, I was with some friends of mine up in a box right over his riot symbol, so I could pretty much see down into his world, which is rare to see because he's got everything around him, man, you know.
Yeah, right. You know, we're going to talk about this in a little while with Nico. He's going to be 70 years old this year. Now, you are about the same age. I'm 53 this year. I don't know, these Maiden songs, they're 8, 9, 10, 12 minute long. It's just a testament to the shape you have to be. And you know, you've for a long time, the shape you have to be to play these songs and to play them at 70 years old, Lee.
For sure, man. I mean, he's in great shape. Every time you see him, he's also an up guy, you know. He's the kind of guy I like. He's an up guy. He likes to be up and happy and having fun and joking around and, hey, come on, let's have a good show, you know, that kind of thing, you know. And that's the kind of thing that every player should be, because the more positivity you bring to the table, the more positivity spreads around you, you know.
Sure. You touched on it before. Guys, we're talking to the great Lee Kelly, 563-999-3029, tremendous drummer. Check him on tour this year with Hank Williams Jr., a great friend of the show. You mentioned before another great musician, Steve Harris. And you as a drummer, and I as a drummer, I know there's always that connection with the bass player in any band we play in. I think they complement each other perfectly, Steve Harris's style and his style.
Oh, for sure. Like, especially like the gallop thing that they have that's like kind of unique to their sound, I guess. In fact, I'm as soon as I get my basement studio waterproofed, I'm cutting another song for a friend of mine, and his description was, I want the Iron Maiden gallop. And I was like, oh, okay.
Nice.
Yeah, so it was like, it's a signature thing, man. And they have a signature sound. I mean, the entire band does, you know.
When you listen to Steve Harris and him, they're doing a lot of triplet fusion, boom, 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 and like you said, galloping.
Man.
So
yeah.
I mean, it's just a dynamic Peace of Mind was our first introduction to him. But like you said, I have friends that know him, and walks into a room. He's a jokester, and he likes to get the crowd going. But I heard once he gets behind the set, he's a different animal. It's all serious business.
Well, yeah, I mean, it has to be, because if you're playing something at that level, Terry Bozzio is the same way. When I saw him in a clinic, I don't know if you ever seen Bozzio in a clinic where he comes out, greets the crowd. He's very jovial, real nice guy, great. He sits down, and Bozzio dropped his head. And when he came back up, it was like, wow, there's something different going on there. He somehow switched his mind to the task at hand. I mean, I watched Bozzio like change 15 feet in front of me and go, wow, that was kind of nuts. The vibe changed, you know?
Yeah.
He got deathly serious, you know?
Favorite Iron Maiden song of all these years that you like?
Oh, gosh. It's probably got to be one of the MTV ones, like, you know, the Trooper, Flight of Icarus, and, you know, also the storyline thing, because I was an English major, I loved the mythology and all that stuff. Number of the Beast was always fantastic, even though it's not Nico. But It was, you know, when Bruce came in too, that changed the band completely as well in a better way. You know, when Dickinson came in.
If you think about it, how many bands can have an album where the singer comes in and the next album, a new drummer comes in and just keep it going? You know, it doesn't always happen like that.
Oh, no. It's luck. It's right place, right time, you know. And, you know, you can go back to that with Ringo and the Beatles. Like, what if that would have happened? Would that have happened? Because even McCartney with the Beatles said, when Ringo came in, that made it, you know.
And
I mean, not that Clive Bird did not make it, because obviously they had, what, 3 or 4 albums before Nico came in, obviously.
Yeah, three.
And then,
But
Nico, when Nico comes in, just raises the bar. It's kind of like John Rutsey started with Rush. Then Neil Peart comes in and boom, you know.
You have Pete Best and Ringo, John Rutsey, Neil Peart, and you have Clive Burr and Nico. That's a good job by you. Yeah, great.
I don't know what the magic is. We're not in the room, but hey, man, it worked for all of them, and that's what we all aspire to hope for, I guess.
Yeah. Guys, we are live, 563-999-3029. Phone lines open. You want to hop on before Nico and also with Nico, talking to the great Lee Kelly. So when do you guys go on tour?
I've been working with the 90s band Little Texas as well. Del Gray, their original drummer. It's 4 of the original 6 guys running Little Texas now. But Del's had some medical issues over the last year or so. And so between Hank Jr. dates, I've been subbing for Little Texas. So go to www.littletexasonline.com for those dates. And then you can go to www.HankJr.com for his dates, and also mine is LeeKellyOnDrums.com for all those links and stuff like that. But yeah, with Hank, we go back out April the 1st.
Nice. And what kind of venues are we playing? Are we playing theaters? Are we playing stadiums? What are we playing?
We're playing pretty much like sheds and arenas with Hank. he really only does 25 to 30 shows a year, you know, because he doesn't have to. And but when it shows up, the crowd shows up, and it's honestly one of the craziest things I've ever been a part of, because, you know, I've never been with an act that you walk out and immediately the crowd goes up. I mean, he's a living legend in the Hall of Fame. And he's nice enough to allow me to play his songs behind him and like it. and know that I'm going to be there behind, you know. And his guitar amps are under my drum riser at a lively 15,000 watts.
Oh, nice.
Yes, I said 15,000 watts. It's one of the loudest stages out there. But it moves some air, but it's a crazy wave to ride, man. I just looked at our tour dates. We're not coming to New Jersey yet.
Right. But before I let you go, talk to me about Lee Kelly playing in front of a crowd of people or 10,000 people. Getting the same drummer?
As what?
A different person with 10 people or 10,000 people, or it's always the same Lee Kelly?
Volume-wise, I definitely ramp it down, depending on the size of the room.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I will hurt people. It's not so much the same intensity as it is the same concentration of, I want to make the songs work, and I want to make you know, if I'm playing a small club with a bunch of friends in town, I just want to make people dance and tap their feet and have a good time. You know, and also make sure that whoever I'm backing is comfortable, like they're just sitting on a cloud, like, hey, cool, I don't have to worry about anything. He's got my back. I can just sing wherever or play wherever I'm at. Everything's cool. And there's a nice, what I always equate it to is like building a house. You know, if the foundation sucks, it's going to fall apart. I just want to be that foundation. That's it. That's
good,
it.
Brother. Brother, I thank you so much for giving me a couple minutes tonight. The great Lee Kelly. We'll be in touch, bro. I'll have you back on the soon. Check out Hank Williams Jr. and all the sites. Lee Kelly, I thank you so much, brother, and we'll talk to you soon. Guys, the great Lee Kelly. Thank you so much, man.
Thanks, bro. We'll put my ears on so I can listen to Nico, man. Thanks, bro. Bye.
Have a great night. Thank you, bro. He's great, man. Great drummer, Lee Kelly from all over, just playing with all these great bands. And I remember we talked on his first interview. He had to be on the show 5 years ago, and I remember we talked about Nico. And when I got Nico on a couple months ago, I said, I got to have Lee on because I know he's going to have some nice words on Nico. So check out all he does, Hank Williams Jr., Lee Kelly on all the social medias. And thank you, Brother Lee. We are live, 563-999-3029, about 5 minutes from Nico. About the Peace of Mind album, the first album is just a crazy. Power Slave, Somewhere in Time. Oh, man, we got Seventh Son, just great stuff. You remember all those early MTV Headbangers Ball? I remember the night when with Madness debuted like 12:30 in the morning, and it was just, oh, Maiden's coming on with a new video. Those are the good old days, Headbangers Ball and stuff. Good times. 563-999-3029. We got great Nico at 8:30, and then Gene Novacek at about 9:30, 9:40. Just wanted to talk about some upcoming shows and around the kit. We are booked until July. Confirmed dates on Around the Kit. We have our next show, April 3rd. I'd like to announce right now, we're doing most likely April 17th. Most likely, I said, if everything comes into fruition, we're going to be moving from the radio professional studio with two or three different camera angles, a producer. We'll talk about all that next show. But we are so pumped up for this new venture. We're going to be doing a live YouTube show. We're going to be revamping our YouTube page. A lot going on Around the Kit World. And big props to a great drummer and good friend of mine, John Besser. John Besser is now involved in the show, 50% me, 50% John. He is the producer, great ideas. John had thrown this idea to me about 2 months ago. He goes, you know, why don't you go to the video after? I said, John, I'm a little nervous, this and that. I said, John, I'll do the video. So we're going to be doing it at a better location than my house. You know, and I'm just pumped that the camera angles, the backdrops, really professional. I'm just so pumped. We are chomping at the bit to get this going. We're going to be doing some practice shows too. So probably April 17th, probably going to be our first show with the video aspect, and we are just elated. We got so much in store for you. Just pumped up, and I got to thank the great John Besser for wanting to do this. You know, it's always good when somebody wants to do it, but somebody as professional as him, and I mean that, no bullshit, you don't have to think about things. When he said something or wanted to do something, he gets it done. And we are so alike. We're up to late at night. He's editing bands he produced, and I'm doing so we're always doing. I like a guy who wants to get involved and is just, you know, all business and no BS. Just great stuff. So I'll be doing some more videos on this new venture, most likely April 17th in a studio with a producer. It's going to be a much different ball game for me, too. We are just so pumped. We are live, 563-999-3029. Let's give our Sentent family a little more love.
Around the Kit is sponsored by Sentent Symbols. Sentent Symbols is quickly becoming the choice for drummers worldwide. With their roots going back to the emperors of the Qing Dynasty, Sentent blends the best of old world know-how with modern techniques to help all drummers find the best fit for them. Whether you're an avid drumming enthusiast or touring professional, Sentent has the perfect combination of products, pricing, and service to fit any drummer's needs. Contact them today to find out what the drum love is really all about. Sentent Cymbals. Forge your sound. And now, back to Around the Kit with Joe Ganzes.
We are back live, 563-999-3029. Just talking about some upcoming shows. We have the great Jim Riley. Have next show, April 3rd. Jim Riley, April 17th. Brian Dune, Daryl's House, and on tour now at Hole & Oates, May 1st. A great Nashville session drummer with a great album called Shapes that I've been loving. David Northup and a great friend of the show, Matt Halpern, May 29th. We just love bringing these great guests your way. Just always love having these guests, and I always thank them for coming on the show. They love what we do here, and that means a lot to me. You know, it's always good when you do a show, but when these guests, you know, love what helps. We're just awaiting Negro right now. 563-999-29. Let me just text him real fast. I'm trying to get Negro. 563-999-3029. Great shows coming up. Looking forward to having Michael Cardalone. He was in Damn Yankees. He has been the drummer. damn Yankees in the last 24 years. The drummer for Lynyrd Skynyrd. Joe Franco will be back on. Tom Yularo, Kenny Arnoff. We have our Simon Phillips tribute show coming up with Jason Gianni, co-host. So we're just pumped up. Great shows coming up. I think we got Nico here. Just want to see him. Nico? Give me a second, guys. Yeah, I love it. All right. Guys, I'm going to play a cool song. Wait, this is a B-side of Iron Maiden. Song, Rose Gold. Legendary, living legend. On drums.
And now, back to Around the Kid with Joe Ganzes.
We are live, 563-999-3029. A great song from Iron Maiden. It gives me great esteem, pleasure to welcome to Around the Kid a living legend in the world of drumming. So, McBrain. So, Joe Ganzes, Around the Kid, how are you, brother?
I am very, very well, mate. How are you doing?
Bro, how you doing tonight? Hello. You sound great, man. It's great to talk to you.
You too, man. You too. Yes, I just I just got back from London yesterday, and unfortunately, I had the dreaded C degree over there, mate. Wasn't very well for 10 days, so had to extend my visit by a week, which was a bit of a pain in the arse. But anyway, other than that, I'm home. I'm fit and well, and looking forward to having a chat with you, Joe.
Man, guys, the legendary Nico McBrain. First of all, before we get started, as a drummer and a lifelong Maiden fan, I want to say to you two words. Thank you. Thank you for 40 years of a top-notch, world-class drummer. You've brought me so much joy as a drummer watching you play.
Well, thank you so very much, mate. At least I've got one true fan. That's cool. No, that's
so,
great.
You know what? Let's take a little trip back. What kind of town, Hackney, England, and what kind of people are in that town?
I don't follow you. What did you say? What did you want to know? What town? London town?
England. Hackney, England, yeah.
Same as everywhere else, mate. You know, mind you that the music scene was a lot healthier than it is at the moment. Back in the day, there were a lot more venues to play, pubs and clubs, and, I think it's the same pretty much around the rest of the world, and maybe more so over here in the States, you know, pay to play, that sort of thing. But it was very healthy back in England. It was always a live band you could go see any night of the week in a pub and clubs and stuff like that. Of course, you had the main venues, you know, Hammersmith Odeon, the Rainbow, those sort of places where the big acts would come through. Then, of course, you got the O2, which is a bigger stadium now. But you know, it was healthy. It was great. You know, lots of malarkey going on. You know, you could get yourself into a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But the music scene was really, really good. You had to work at it though. You know, you couldn't. You, it's like anything else. You can't just drop into it and think, you know, have that attitude that you deserve it. You got to go find it and work hard at it. So same like anywhere else, you know.
Absolutely. You grew up in a very musical family and household. Your dad played the trumpet and your mom played the piano. When you look back, Nico, do you think this was an early head start for you and even sort of an early education and introduction into music?
Without a doubt. I mean, there was always something going on, you know, on the gramophone. Mum was a massive Frank Sinatra and Nat King Cole fan. So I was like privy to hearing a lot of those great songs, which, you know, two great phenomenal singers, but absolutely fantastic backing bands or orchestras, you know. So I was definitely influenced by a lot of jazz and swing music. My father was a George Shearing fan and Benny Goodman and people like that. So there was always a healthy plethora of music going on in the house, especially when mum and dad had parties, you know, their friends over on the weekend. And, you know, that was, you know, so I was definitely encouraged by that music. I enjoyed it. And you know, I really did get a head start. My mum, actually, she didn't have a piano at home. She played when she was a child and at school, and played for her family. But she kind of went off the boil with it, you know. And, you know, I don't ever really remember my mum sitting down at a piano, tickling the ivories. My father later on, in his later years, where he bought a Lowry organ. which when it came out, it was the first transistorized organ. You know, it was like the size of a Hammond B3, you know. And in
right.
fact, I still have that. I still have that organ, my father's organ at home here in my studio. It actually doesn't work at the moment. But, you know, I was very encouraged by my father and my mother. They really, you know, in fact, my dad managed a band that I was in for a couple of years, a band called Axe. It was spelled AX. So my dad really encouraged it, you know. And mum was like, you know, she was encouraging and knew that that was my passion to play. So, you know, they bought me my first drum set when I was 10 and a half years old. So, you know,
right.
much to my mother's like, oh, no, you know, I've got to have this drummer on my hands. Dad's going, it's a five-minute wonder. mum said, look, you know, you need to go and get a trade. So she basically through, you know, my father said to me, look, anything for a peaceful life, son, do what your mother asks. Go to school, get a trade, learn a trade. Once you got your trade, then it's up to you. You go where you like. So I went to college for 4 years and took a mechanical craft practice, which was basically an engineering course, not mechanical
right.
like it is over here with cars. This is what we're talking about, engineering, lathe work, milling and technical drawing stuff. So I went to college for 4 years, one day, two nights a week. And as soon as I got my certificate of passing the City and Guilds course, I turned pro. But my mum and dad were like totally, and my sister was like, she was off doing her own thing
right.
with her boyfriend and stuff, but she was very musically inclined too. So yeah, I was very blessed to have mum and dad pushing me, you know.
You got your first drum set at 11 years old for Christmas. Talk to me about the emotions on finally, after hitting the pots and pans of getting these drums, and also your love and admiration for the late, great Joe Morello.
All right. Well, yeah, mum and dad bought me this Broadway John Gray kit. It was a three-piece. It was a starter kit, you know, and snare drum, bass drum, and a tom-tom. It was I think it was a 12x8 or something. It was very short, single-headed, and you had to secure the tom-tom by this clamp that clamped onto the rim of the bass drum. There wasn't like an actual tom holder on the bass drum. It was you had to screw it in on the rim, which was really cool. Anyway, that was my first. And when I got that, I was just like, oh my gosh! It was like, you know, talk about kid in the candy store. I had bought the store. It felt like I'd won the lottery almost, you know. And of course, once I got that kit, you know, my father worked with me to set it up, and I mean, there wasn't a lot to it. But to me, it was like, what do I do with this, you know, with the snare drum stand and the bass drum pedal, obviously. So dad and I, you know, we set it up and off I went. And then one day I was, it was a Monday evening, because I remember my dad was doing the ironing. And my father loved to iron. He used to find it very relaxing. My mum loved that, you know. You know, my husband loves to iron. You know, so we had this little black and white TV, and I remember, you know, it was about 1964-ish, around that period of time. All of a sudden, there's this Dave Brubeck quartet on there and doing Take Five, which was a big hit in England.
Yeah,
and Joe featured a drum solo. And now you've got to bear in mind, this was all live. There was no pre-recorded stuff on the telly unless it was a film, you know.
Right.
So, you know, I sat and I watched this guy playing and I went, blimey, who's that, Dad? And he said, it's Joe Morello, son. He's designing the shirt. And I went, oh, said I, you know, I was just completely engrossed in his playing. And the fact that it was in a 5/4 timing, which was very unheard of, you know. Everybody was there. The beat music at the time is all 4/4. So this is Take Five, you know, it's in 5/4. And I'm like, what the heck is that? I was intrigued by it. But then Joe flew off on this solo and it was just wicked. And I went, I want to be that dark sunglass-like guy, Dad. And my old man said, you'll never be as good as Joe Morello, son. And with that, after the track finished, I went out in the kitchen, picked up a pair of my mum's knives out of the cutlery drawer, and beat the 9 living daylights out of the gas cooker. And that was me. That was, you know. But it's funny, you know. I grew up listening to a lot of different jazz and swing jazz bands and stuff. But and then I got intrigued by Joe that really inspired me. You know, and I went, well, that's it, you know. But I don't play jazz. I was more into the pop bands and playing cover versions of Stone stuff and Wilson Pickett and Booker T and the MGs, stuff like that, early day stuff, you know. And, but he was really inspired me to really get, you know, pick up the drums and take it from there.
Yeah. Guys, we're talking with the living legend, Nico McBrain, 563-999-3029. What do you remember about the first song you ever played, Needles and Pins?
Needles and Pins. Yeah, Searchers. Oh, my gosh, yeah, that was... It was in, well, you know, I mean, you know, we had the gramophone, and the great thing was that, you know, I could sit and play along with the track, you know. Obviously, you know, the gramophone didn't go very loud, but then I wasn't playing loud. I was just, you know, early days and early stages, and I remember just listening to it and playing along to it. A lot of Searchers stuff, actually, and you know, that was it. And I mean the memories are a bit vague, but you know, those that was how basically I would learn my trade, was listening to the record and playing along with it, and then you know, sort of you embellish yourself, you put your own little bits and pieces in it, and I go off and do a solo on the second verse, you know. But Needles and Pins, I saw a face. It was a face I knew. Go and check it out. Good little bit of playing on.
Yeah,
it.
Great stuff. Great stuff, Nico. Let's go. Let's fast forward a little bit. Act like Billy Day, and go to like 1975. Your first big tour in America with the band Streetwalkers. Was this experience for you? Was this a good experience for you, sort of to get your feet wet in the business?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you know, we'd done a bunch of European shows, and you know, that was my first real, you know, my first real touring band. I did a little tour in England, but this was the first, the big time sort of thing for me. And we came over to the States, and We toured with the Tubes. We toured with Boss Gags, and that was a stunning. The very first show that I remember, we started in New Haven. So I forget where we were. We ended up anyway staying in New Haven, and then we came down to Atlanta. We stayed at a Holiday Inn. I'll never forget that. It was a motel Holiday Inn, and we played Alex Cooley's Electric Ballroom, and we supported Dr. John and the Night Trippers, and we did three nights there and two shows a night, and that was something else. So, yeah, I got my feet wet with that tour, and then the greatest thing about that tour was when I was in New York, I went to Manny's Music. I don't think it's there anymore. And I bought a Ludwig 402 Supersensitive. Superphonic, not the Supersensitive. Superphonic 402, John Bonham 6.5. Well, you know, it was like John Bonham was out there, you know, Zeppelin were doing their thing. But I just bought this drum because I loved it, you know, and it wasn't really so much inspired by the sound that John was using, but I saw this drum and I went, I've got to have that. And I paid $80 for it, brand new. And I remember the guy that served it to, you know, that was serving me. I don't remember his name anyway. He served me. He said, well, you've got that snare drum. Why don't you look at that drum set up there and buy that to go with the snare? And it was a chrome five-piece Ludwig, 22-inch bass drum, 12-13 tom-tom, and a 16 floor. Well, it's four-piece, really, because I've already got the snare.
Yeah.
He said, I said, how much is that then? It's $200, he said. 1975, wow. $200 for a five-piece, you know, stainless, well, chrome Ludwig.
Oh,
you
chrome.
Know, I think, I think it was a maple shell as well. I'm not sure. And I was like, no, I can't afford it, mate. And I wish I had bought it, but I bought the snare drum, which had played. I've used that snare drum on probably, I think, 13 of the Iron Maiden albums.
Ah, nice.
And it's called it's called The Beast.
Yeah.
The Beast. So, yeah, that was a great experience, mate. You know, I really got my feet wet. And, oh, we played, you're playing with Boss Gags.
Right.
I hung out a lot with Jeff Picaro. Jeff and I got, like, we were like two peas in a pod, the pair of us. And, you know, he I'd sit and watch him every night. And he'd sit and watch me. And we'd go off, you know, just, we were like soul brothers. It was a great experience. Seeing him, you know, we were both young, you know, raring to go, firing up, you know. It was good fun, mate. Yeah, it was a great tour. And it was also a fantastic band. I don't know if anybody, any of your listeners out there have heard any of this Street Walk. Well, I did. They were a bunch of albums, but I did two albums with them. One was called Downtown Flyers, and the other one was Red Card. So if you get a chance to have a listen, it's completely different to anything I've done with Maiden. Obviously, this was like a funk rock blues band. You know, it was very, very, it's fantastic stuff. So if you guys can have a chance, go and have a listen on YouTube. You can find everything on YouTube nowadays.
Guys, we're having a chat with my mate, 563-999-3029, Nico McBrain. Later on, the legendary Pat Travis, singer Jenny Darren McKitty, and the French band Trust. What did you learn about playing with all these bands, and did these experiences, Nico, give you the confidence and maturity you would eventually need to join one of the biggest bands ever?
Yeah, you know, it's a learning curve. You know, some people get to find success without going through too many different experiences with other bands, and I think that sometimes that can be a hindrance to, you know, just to the maturity, as you say, the maturity that you need to have with attitude and how you listen to each other, and you learn the kind of rules of the road, so to speak, you know. Having played with all those various different bands and wonderful experiences, you know, I was, because prior to going on tour with Streetwalkers, I did a couple of years of studio work, and I was doing sessions. Now, I didn't read music, I still don't. I was one of these guys that could go in a studio, the guys would play a song to me, maybe the one, you know, because you used to do a session, you used to do two songs in 3 hours. That set your kit up, get a sound that's up for it, everybody walks in, learn the song, do the B-side, and you're out within 3 hours. So you couldn't take your time. You couldn't go, oh, can I have a listen to that? Oh, no, I can't keep messing this bit up. So I had an ear to be able to hear it and pretty much learn it, you know, after a couple of listens. So that kind of set me off on an experience where every different band that I went to. Jenny Darren was kind of a soul rock singer. You know, Trust were a really heavy rock, kind of almost progressive in a way. Some of their songs, you know, they sang in French. McKitty was a three-piece rock band, and Pat Travers, obviously. So Pat was the next big thing that I joined after the Streetwalkers. And that really, what I took away from that is I was playing with, well, not only an amazing young guitar player from Canada, I was playing with Miles Peter Cowlin on bass, who was absolutely frighteningly good. And that's one of the great things that I've taken from all of my, you know, from my lifetime in the industry, is I've always been blessed to play with great bass players. And that's really important to the makeup of yourself as a drummer. He's your partner, you know. So I've learned a lot by these experiences of playing with these guys. And when I was with Streetwalkers, to kick that off, there was a guy called John Blattel on bass, who unfortunately passed away, I think, about 8 or 9 years back. May have been less time than that, but he had leukemia, and we lost him. But he was like this funky, he was like a Mark King bass player with a bass, like he played it quite high. And he had this lovely slap bass vibe, you know, and I just loved him. But, taking all these different experiences, when I landed the job with Maiden, you know, I was already kind of hardened to these different experiences with these bands. Obviously, Trust was the last band prior to Maiden. I did 2 years with them, and we did extensive touring just in France. And we actually, funny enough, we did the Killers. We supported Maiden on their Killers tour in England.
Right.
We did about 32 shows across England, you know, supporting Maiden with Trust. And I got my feet wet, you know, with Trust touring with Maiden. But when I was with McKitty, the three-piece, yet again, you know, I loved that. And then this is where I think a lot of my style came from, was playing not just time, but percussive drums, because there's only three of you, you know, bass, guitar, and guitar. So, McKitty, we did a festival in Belgium, and it happened to be Iron Maiden's very first gig that they played outside Europe. Or outside England in Europe. So lots of history kind of was written prior to me joining the band, you know. So those experiences, definitely I took a lot. I learned a lot from them. And, I then took that into Maiden. And I'm sure that's really what, you know, stood me in good stead with them, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Joining Maiden in 82, you know, we always talk about everything. I'm playing drums 40 years this year. You're playing much longer than me. We always want to know about the drum set and the physical aspect. Were you mentally prepared for Maiden at this time?
Oh, well, yeah, you have to be mentally prepared to learn the music and execute it, you know, and do what you do best. That even applies to even if you're playing a cover of a song. You have to learn it, and you have to perform it and play it, and you have to be mentally prepared for it. And that's how each of us has our identity. That's our fingerprint.
Sure.
How you prepare it and how you go about it. For me, you know, I already had a large kit when I was with Pat Travers. On the second album I did with him, the first album, Making Magic, was recorded on a Heyman set, 20-inch, 22 bass drum, I had a five-piece kit, which was the second drum set I actually ever bought in my life. And I still have that today, funny enough. And when we started to do a lot of extensive touring, and he said, Nick, he said, because we're doing the bigger venues now, I think you need a bigger kit. He said, go and get a double bass drum kit. And I went, you having a laugh? No freaking way am I playing two bass drums back. Why not? I said, because I only play one. And I said, that's my style. I said, I find it hard enough to do it with one. Why do I want to compound the issue and use two? He said, well, it should be easier. I said, no, I'm not using two, but I'll get a big F-off kit. So I went to a drum shop in Green Lanes in Haringey, which was where I used to go all the time. It was called Berry's Music. And it wasn't just a drum shop. It was like everything. They had a couple of drum sets, and they had all kinds of sheet music and whatnot, and sold records and what. Proper music shop. Anyway, so I walked in there one day, and knowing that Pat wanted me to buy a kit. Now, I had bought my very first drum set was a Sonor. So I thought, I'll go and have a look for a Sonor. So I went into this Berry's Music Shop, And the guy behind the counter, I said to him, "Yeah," I said, "you got anything, you know, like new stuff from Sonor I can have a look at, like a magazine, a brochure?" He said, "Yeah, as it happens, one just came in the other week. Here it is. Have a look at that." And I've opened it to the very first page I opened, actually, opened to the middle. You know, it was like 7 or 8 pages, and, you know, it just opened in the middle. It just so happened. And there's this big F-off, double bass drum, Sonor concert rack drum set, picture of it, and it was silver. And I've looked at this thing, and I bought the silver Heyman, right, which was the second kit I bought. And I thought, oh, that's nice, because it's silver. I love that Heyman color, so, oh, I'll have some of this. So I went, that's it. And it was the Sonor XK9212 series drum set. I even remember the freaking model number. And I went back to Pat with the bro. I said to the guy, "Can I take this with me?" He said, "Yeah, I'll get another one." So I went back to Pat and I showed him the picture, and he said, "Oh, that's bloody great." He said, that'd be perfect. So I said, "Well, you've got to imagine that kit with only one bass drum." He said, no, you've got to use two. But I said, "No, I'll take it from a 12-piece to an 11. And that's how that drum set basically is the same footprint that I use today. The only thing that's different is the amount of cymbals that I'm using. So it was a six-inch tom. These were bongo drums. So when I first bought my kit in 77, it was that, you know, the 6 and 8 were like bongos. There was a big bracket. You couldn't adjust each drum. It was like the one and done sort of deal for the two. 6, 8, 10, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 18 floor, 24 bass drum. And that was the size that they had, 24 and a 22 in the picture. But I went with a 24. And then that's how I started with Sonor back in 77. And I remember, making a long story even longer, I called up Sonor directly. I got the number in Germany, and I phoned up and I found out who owned the company. And I put a call in the Horse Link. And I don't know, to this day, I still have no idea how I managed to get through to him. So there's this young upstart drummer who's, you know, a year into playing with Pat, and I had Horse Link on the phone. He said, "Oh, yeah, so could I help you?" I said, "Oh, Mr. Link." I said, "My name's Nicko McBrain." I said, "I'm playing drums with an amazing guitar player called Pat Travers. Have you ever heard of him?" "Never heard of him," he said. I went, "Okay." I said, "But I'd like to do a deal with you for your Sonor XK9212 series drum set." "Ah." And it went quiet, and I thought, "Oh, gosh, what's going on here?" So then he turns around and he says, "Let me ask you a question." I went, "Okay." And I'm thinking, you know, how soon do you want it? You know, what color do you want? He turned around and he said,
Yeah.
"Do Rolls-Royce give away their cars?" And I thought, what kind of a question is that? I said, "I don't think they do." He said, "Well, we're the Rolls-Royce of drums, and we do not give our drums away. Thank you for your phone call." And he hung up on me. So that was my first introduction in 1977 to the wonderful Herr Link, which later would turn out to be a phenomenal relationship that we both had. But I ended up buying that drum set for £600. Cost me £600 in 1977, and went off with Pat, did an album, did a bit more touring, went off with Mahogany Rush to supporting them, and that was fantastic. And then I ended up being asked to leave from Pat, and he kept my drum set. And so I had to go back to the management company. This was like a few months after things didn't work out for us, and I went to the drum company, to the management, and I said, "Look, you know, Pat kept me drum set." "What do you mean he kept your drum set?" I said, "He's fired me." And they said, "You what?" They didn't even know this management company, right? So they said, "We'll buy another kit." So they replaced it, and I still have that drum set in storage. Unfortunately, nice. It's not. unfortunately, Joe, it's not silver anymore. It's gone a kind of gold color. It oxidized.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, there you go. That's my big kit story. And that's basically, as I said, the only thing that was different with that kit, it was a concert rack kit. So they didn't have a bottom head on it. And that kit actually called it Peace of Mind. I think it might have done Power Slave as well, to be honest with you. Then I went with a double-headed kit what was the next one? Somewhere in Time.
Somewhere in Time, yeah.
Yeah, so that was. And on the Power Slave tour, I went back. Originally, I used the double egg kit for the tour, a white one, for the Peace of Mind tour. And then I went back to a concert rack kit, but square sizes on the Power Slave tour. And that is where I ended up getting the idea for the drums later on down the line to use the double-headed kit with square sizes. So everything was basically square size, not power toms, 8x8, 10x10, 12, and so on down the kit.
Great stuff, man. You mentioned double bass. I think you played double bass on one song called "Face in the Sand" or "Fans of Death."
Yeah. Tell me about it, flipping Nora. So Adrian came in with this song, right? And he goes, Adrian's brilliant. He writes. He does a demo, right? And he put most of the guys do that now, but I'm going back quite a long time ago. And he came in and he's gone, have a listen to this. And he's played this tape for us. And it's like, he's got this programmed drum track and he's played bass on it and all. It's really rocking. I've gone, and he's going, and I'm like, whoa, hang on a minute. I said, that's a double bass drum. He says, I know, he said, but you're a man of your prowess, he said. Buttering me up, he said, you could do that with one pedal, right? And I went, you're having a laugh now, you are taking the piss. So I said, all right, we'll have a go at it. And I got through about a verse and a half. And I said, mate, I can't do it. He said, it does need a bass drum part, it needs that sort of like driving baseline on the tubs. And I said, let me get a bass drum, let me just try it with a double bass drum pedal. I said, but you've got to bear in mind, I I've never played with a two bass drums, two pedals, before. And I said, first of all, my left side isn't going to be, I said, I know I'll whack my hi-hat, kick it back and play quite, eighth notes on my hi-hat a lot of the time, keep it going like that. But there's a difference in the strength, the dexterity of your ankle, if you like. And I said, it probably won't sound right. It'll be like flamming, one note will be harder than the other. And he said, well, have a go. And we were in rehearsals, and I'm sitting there, and I thought, I quite like that. And the problem is I had to move my hi-hat stand to get the freaking second pedal in, the left side pedal, right? And I hate that. Yeah. My hi-hat the whole point of my drum set is dictated from, this is how it started. Hi-hat high, snare drum, two tom-toms, two up, one down, right? But I always play with a high hi-hat. And I was not prepared to go down lower, like Simon Phillips plays it lower until it, his left hand tom tom, so I think he's 10 or 12 above the hi hat. It's not; they're all kind of lower because he doesn't have to have them high, right? Ergonomically, it makes sense to be able to play it lower, but so everything was dictated by the height of my hi hat, so. Right. I had to place everything higher. Now, the problem was when I put the second pedal in there, I had to scoot the old hi-hat over, which then infringed upon the 10 and 8 inch. It was just a nightmare. So anyway, right. I managed it. But when we recorded the track, it sounded, my left foot wasn't anywhere near as strong as my right, and I tried to not play the right as hard as the left, as hard as I normally would. So I tried to dynamically play less on the right side to match the left, and it just didn't work.
Yeah.
Plus the fact I sped up, noticeably
yeah.
sped up. But we kept it in there, and eventually we cheated it in Pro Tools, and we brought the left hand bass drum up. DB wise, by I don't know
right.
how many DB, but we and I remember Kevin Shirley was out, and I was getting so frustrated. I said, "No, this ain't working." He said, "Look here, come over here," and he went into the Pro Tool and he pulled up this screen that had the signal of the right bass drum in a curve format, right? The signal of the left one, which was lower, and he said, "Watch this,"
right.
and he pressed the keyboard with whatever he pressed. Took the cursor on the mouse, pulled it on the left side, went up, and the whole thing's moving. Right? I've gone, oh, that's interesting. And he pulled it up level with the right one and went, right, listen to this. Saved it, pressed the button, and it was ticka 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 ticka. And I'm like, why couldn't you have done that in the first place? It's me pulling my hair out for half an hour. He said, well, I was just trying to make sure if you got it right, Mick.
We cheated it.
But yes, I did one track with Maiden and used a double pedal. I quite enjoyed it, actually. It was fun. Yeah.
Yeah. We are talking with the living legend, Nico McBrain. He's been so nice to give us some time tonight. 563-999-3029. Right away, out of the bat, you come on to Peace of Mind album and the intro to the world-class classic, Where Eagles Dare. Talk to me about this selection, and is this Nico McBrain's Mona Lisa of drum parts?
Mona Lisa. Yeah, I suppose you could say it is, really. I mean, it was, it was the first track on the first album I played with Maiden, and, it's just, well, the drum intro itself is kind of a standalone fingerprint, I'll give you that. But then the track itself is just mentally good. I mean, it's a Steve Harris, it's one of the first real classic Steve Harris tracks, I mean, apart from Hallowed, Be Thy Name, and various tracks off of Number of the Beast. But, this was his first real, I was just blown away by the actual overall track. I mean, the intro that, it took a bit of time to get that together because Steve turned around and said, I want a big F off at drum fill at the beginning of this song. And I worked on this drum motif, starting on the 6-inch tom, working my way around it in every drum possible on the way down to the 18, with this incredible flurry going on. And and I turned around and I called him down, and I played it for him. But no, it's too long. I said, well, hang on a minute. You asked for a big F off drum fill. This is it. So anyway, we broke it down. We eventually came up with the triplet kind of vibe on it, In fact, the makeup of it is it's a flam with a four-note grouping behind it. Babbidi-ga-doodle, babbidi-ga-doodle-y, babbidi-ga-daddle-y. So it's one, two, a flam, four beats, da-da-da on the snare, babbidi-goo, da-da-da, babbidi-goo, da-da.
Yes.
And it's not a very hard part when you slow it down, but when it's played at a little bit of speed, it is impressive. It was a fantastic piece of music. So we get out and we finally recorded it. When we finished the album and we went out and started rehearsing for the tour, Harry went, right, we're going to open with Where Eagles Dare, show you off a bit, and you're going to do a drum solo. You're having a laugh. I'm going to do a drum solo. Anyway, for that tour, we opened with Where Eagles Dare. I asked him, I said, look, can I not have a couple of songs to get warmed up? And rather than going straight out cold playing that drum fill, and then the triplet, the actual triplet fill through the verse and the chorus, and then there's a four-note bass drum in the kind of bridge section. Back of the bows. One, two, three, four. And it's quite a tempo. That's one bass drum part. It's pretty tight. Yeah. I'd say that's my Mona Lisa track.
You mentioned
a world-class writer, a lyricist. You mentioned a world-class bass player, Steve Harris. Talk to me about the special marriage you and Steve have had for 40 years and how you both complemented each other.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, that's the thing. You know, that's your marriage. In any band, you know, the drums and bass are the anchor that holds it all together. You know, there's no disrespect to the guitar players and the vocals. Everybody has their part to play, but in the rhythm section, that is your partner. That's your partner in crime. That's the love of your life. That's the enemy. That's you know when you lock in with your bass player and you know, it's. It's hard to explain it. It's, you know, when I was saying earlier that, you know, I've been blessed to play with these incredible bass players all through my career, or, you know, prior to Maiden. And then I've been blessed for 40 years to play with the top best heavy rock, hard-hitting bass player. You know, there are great players out there, you know, it's wonderful. You know, Tony Franklin is a great player, and Billy Sheehan and all these wonderful players, but they aren't Steve Harris. Steve has got a unique way of playing the melody with his bass. Plus, he plays, he throws some lovely chord shapes in. And, you know, it's a joy to actually come up with drum parts to complement Steve. We're talking about the first, you know, you talk about the Mona Lisa, you know, you've got a blank canvas, and then you come up with the Mona Lisa part. You know, you've got to start somewhere. So that when we start and work out what we're doing, it's just an absolute joy. There have been arguments over the years, and there's things what I've changed when we rehearse it, and then we go to record it, and I've changed the bass drum part a little bit. And, you know, you go, "Wait, what's going on, you Joe? That's not what we worked out." You know, as we do, maybe 10 of the, I don't know, 15 albums I've been on, or however many it is, it's been an absolute joy to, you know, sit and work these parts out. And when it's a Steve song, we sit together, we kick everybody else out, and the two of us work out what we're playing. We lock it in. And nowadays, you've got the option to be out, got hard drives running 24/7 in your studio. So, you know, we sit down and go, right, let's record that bit. So neither of us kind of change anything or compliment or make a change that doesn't work. And we can refer it and reference back. But he's an absolute genius. I've said it to him so many times. And, you know, Senjutsu, you listen to those, you know, Hell on Earth. And what such a great track. And The Parchment, that happens to be my favorite track, actually. I'm one of them.
Nice.
You know, you get this guy that's not just an amazing bass player. He's an amazing songwriter, as you said, and lyricist. You know, his stories are, like, incredible. And I've been 40 years I've played with this guy and this band, and there's never a dull moment. And I am so looking forward. Hopefully I can do everybody justice when we get back together. You know, I'm an old man now. And I need to be able to sit behind my band with Steve and lock it in and drive it.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to get back and start rehearsals the end of April.
Yeah, we can't wait either. We the legendary Nico McBrain. Brother, I got a couple more, and I can't thank you for this time. I wanted to ask you, Nico McBrain, part of the drums.
I lost you there, mate. Hello.
Oh, you there?
There you are. I lost your question. It you disappeared on me.
You hear me now?
Yeah, there you go.
I'm going to ask you, is Nico McBrain part of the drums, or are the drums part of you?
Oh, I think it's a little bit of both, mate. I eat, live, breathe, and shit my drums. But it, well, not literally, but I do. Yeah, you know that. I think it's pretty much I live for my drums. You know, I still have that passion for playing and the excitement and the frustration of when I take a drum head off and put a new drum head on and try and tune it. I still get pissed off. I still love the excitement and the look of a drum, you know. And you know when you go into a drum shop or a music shop that's got drums in it, and you look at the new stuff. I still get excited when I do that. I go in and I see stuff that I've seen for years, you know, the brands and whatnot. But I still get a buzz out of walking into a music shop and having a look at a snare drum. And, you know, new stuff. So, yeah, I still have that passion inside me after all these years, mate, you know.
Yeah.
I think that for drummers especially, I think, have that inherent gene, if you like. It's not a sort of thing that you get into playing. I know there's so many drummers out there that want to play professionally or have gigs on the weekend and, you know, have a semi-pro life with playing. But they still can relate to that thing. Yeah, I have that feeling when I walk into a drum shop or a music shop and see a drum set. You know, first thing
Absolutely.
You want to do is have a go on it, right? That's the first thing you want to do. Can I have a go on that drum set? And what's the answer 9 times out of 10? No. Unless, of course, it's a guitar center or Sam Ash or something. It's got a drum room. You can go and have a knock, you know.
Right. In a couple of months, you'll be 70 years old. Just tremendous.
Yeah.
What is the main recipe for Nico McBrain to still play at this world-class level? What's the main recipe, brother?
Well, it's first of all, it's having a good woman in your life to look after you.
Yeah.
That's very important. I've cleaned my act up, I'll be honest with you. I haven't had a drink. It'll be 7 years in May.
Nice.
I'm a boring old fart when it comes down to that. But I realized, you know, that, you know, my singer got sick in 2015 with throat cancer. And there's me drinking myself to death. And he survived it and he beat it. And I sat back, and one of the reasons I stopped drinking was I thought, well, hang on a minute. You know, I've got a brother here that I could have lost. And there's me being an absolute fool, drinking myself stupid, where I was drinking to the stage where I'd get up the next day and go, what happened last night? What did I do?
Right.
And so I stopped drinking. I stopped doing drugs years and years prior to that. You know, I was doing a bit of everything. Not everything, but, you know, I was on Kalau and smoking. I stopped smoking in 1986. So I started to look after myself. And I think what I'm saying to everybody out there is you've got to do that. You've got to look after. It's all right when you're young having a bit of a party. But when you get older, you've got to be sensible. I like to have a good meal a day. Get enough sleep. That's very important. When you get older, you need a bit more rest. And you know, we still run and start firing up and feeling like we're 24 or 20 years old, you know. You know, the mind's willing, but the body ain't sometimes. But if you get a good night's sleep, and to do that, I don't mean just by terms of like having 7 or 8 hours kip. I mean, good sleep is stick some silicone earplugs in so no one's going to wake you up. And the ice machine down the hallway doesn't keep you awake all night. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Have a good meal a day. I don't really exercise. I mean, I find that playing is enough for me. I like to go and play golf, and I go for walks, and I try and look after myself like that. So it's very important, you know. And, you know, of course, we've all been in lockdown for 2 years. So, you know, it's been a bit, you know, I've put the Netflix come YouTube package on, sitting on the, you know, like, because there's nothing else to do, you know.
yeah.
So, yeah, look after yourself, you know, and this very important, really is very important to get good rest, good food. And now I don't normally have a big breakfast in the morning. I'll have a brunch sort of thing. You know, lunchtime I might have I might have my eggs and bacon and something like that. But, you know, I make sure I have a good meal. And if you're going to do a show, boys and girls, by the way, don't eat too close to going on stage because it can be a bit of a problem, especially if you get a bit of indigestion halfway through the third song or whatever, you know. So don't eat too close. But, yeah, you know, it's good to look after yourself. And that's my routine that I stick to when I'm out with the boys.
Nico, I have one last question. Before I get to that, I want to thank the man that brought me and you together, a good friend of ours, Mike Vanderhoof, great drummer for Y&T. I just love Mike.
Absolutely.
And I know you're good friends with him. So I thank Mike Vanderhoof for hooking us up. I've asked every drummer 7 years this one main question, and all I ask, brother, is no BS, an honest answer. Nico McBrain,
right.
How would you rate interview, honestly?
How would I rate what? Say it again. How would I rate your interview?
This interview, me and you tonight.
Oh, my God, terrible, man. Absolutely the worst I think I've ever done in my life.
Thank you.
Be honest with you, it's been great. You've done your homework. You're a great interviewer. Is it interviewee or interviewer? I can't remember. I'm the interviewer.
Yeah.
You're the interviewee or whatever. No, been great, mate. I love your questions. You know, and you know, it's nice when you talk to somebody that has done their homework and knows the history behind the guy that they're speaking to. And I thank you for that. And again, I'd like to say thanks to Mike for hooking you and I up. And
yes,
he's a great player, a lovely man. And you know, Y&T, one of my favorite bands. They've been, you know, in fact, when we were touring back in the early 80s, that was one of, you know, we used to have, you know, what were they, the cassette 8, whatever they were called. You remember those, you know, the 8 tracks on the bus?
Yeah.
And Y&T were in there with Saga, which was another band that was well listened to.
Yeah.
And my hat's off to Mike. Great player, great band. And thank you, Joe, for bringing me on air and letting me yap on and make a fool of myself. But yes, you've been great. You really have. Thank you so much.
Okay, brother. We will do it again. I want to say thank you again for the last 40 years, and we'll follow you. We'll check out the tour this year. Guys, the great, legendary Nico McBrain. Nico, I'll hit you up soon to say hi. But thank you, brother, for this time on my show.
Absolutely. Been an absolute pleasure, mate. Thank you so much. And everybody stay safe out there. Don't get COVID. Not nice. And I was triple vaccinated, and it floored me. But please be sensible, be well, and Merry Christmas to you all.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. The great Nick. Thanks, brother.
Bye-bye, buddy. Bye-bye.
Oh, great, great. Oof. Nico McBrain on Around the Kit. Oof. Guys, I apologize for the phone calls. The phone lines are absolutely going crazy. I got to be honest. I'm talking it all to myself tonight. 15 people on the line. I didn't want to take phone calls, and I don't have to admit that. I'm admitting that. I didn't want to take no phone calls tonight because I wanted to keep asking him questions, and I apologize for that. He gave us so much there, going back to Hackney, England, to 70 years old, taking care of his body, no drink in 7 years. He had sort of a life intuition, you know. When Bruce Dickinson got sick 7 years ago with cancer, changed his life. It's a good thing. Just great, great story. Once again, we thank the legendary, living legend, Nico McBrain.
Around the Kit is sponsored by Send 10 Cymbals. Send 10 Cymbals is quickly becoming the choice for drummers worldwide. With their roots going back to the emperors of the Qing Dynasty, Senten blends the best of old world know-how with modern techniques to help all drummers find the best fit for them. Whether you're an avid drumming enthusiast or touring professional, Senten has the perfect combination of products, pricing, and service to fit any drummer's needs. Contact them today to find out what the drum love is really all about. Senten Cymbals. Forge your sound.
And now, back to Around the Kit with Joe Ganzes.
Guys, we are live 563-999-3029, and I'm going to say this again. Thank you. 563-999-3029. Let's once again tell you what's coming up on Around the Kit. Speaking of Mike Vanderhoof from Y&T, he'll be our guest April 3rd. The legend, Jim Riley. And don't forget, guys, that's most likely going to be our show where we're going to be doing it in a professional studio with my producer, great drummer and great friend of mine, my producer, John Bessa. Just so pumped for that venture. So most likely April 17th, we have one more show on the radio, and then we go live on the air, YouTube, with the camera angle just pumped up. May 1st, Brian Dune, Darryl's House, Hole & Oates, great session drummer from Tennessee with a great album out called Shapes. David Northup, May 15th, and one of my favorites, a good friend of mine, the great Matt Halperin, May 29th. We are live, 563-999-3029. I always love to bring on a weekend warrior on each show, like myself, a guy who's really, you know, has much passion as Nico. Even though he might not be as famous as Nico, but just loves playing, it gives me great pleasure to welcome Around the Kit, Gene Novacek. Gene, Joe Gans and Around the Kit, what's up, brother?
How you doing, Joe?
Gene, what's going on? How you doing, man?
Oh, just hanging in there, listening to the show with Nico. That was pretty awesome. Lots of kind of uniqueness to him, but, you know, I was kind of in the same boat as he was early on with going to school. I got a mechanical engineering degree. I never could play to where I could be, you know, anything close to a professional drummer at that time. So I basically became an engineer for a while, and then I kind of learned that, okay, this is what I really want to do. So just continue to play some drums, you know, get the feel for it. What else can you say, right? Once you start it, you don't put it down.
Yeah, let's go back a little bit. Were you self-taught? Were you have any instructors? Are you reading music? You know, what's going back, Novacek, years ago?
If we go back to the beginning, high school days, you know, I went in high school in 1980, and just like the rest of us that grew up in the 80s, heavy metal, rock, hair band stuff, that was the only thing you really cared about other than girls. A few friends played some instruments. My stepbrother played bass guitar. And then here I am. I would just listen to it. Finally, somebody came up, a friend of mine, Bobby Sikorsky, and he said, "I've got an old drum set. You want it?" Well, hell yeah, I want it. You know, why not? Kind of a metallic blue old Ludwig set. Not even sure what the model was. It wasn't a power tom set of any sort. It was just kind of a little jazz set. You know, from there, after a few years, I went in the military, so that kind of put a damper on a few things. And then you get out, you play a little bit, you don't really own anything, and then you finally buy a set that, okay, that's the one I want. You know, I looked everywhere for a drum set that had my personality in it. Kind of like what Nico was saying, where he bought that sonar kit with all the toms, everything you could imagine. I already had this preconceived idea of what I wanted to buy versus what I could afford.
Right.
I looked online. I looked at every store you could possibly imagine. Went to all the guitar centers. You know, I travel for work. So every time I went out of town, I looked, and I just could never find anything. Finally, I went into a store in Kansas City that I never knew existed. And if it, you know, just to give them, I'm not really giving them a plug, but they're the only all-out drum store in Kansas City. I had never heard of it. Walked in, told the guy what I was looking for, and he was like, let me show you this. We went in the back room, literally, and it's the perfect setup, 10, 12, 13, 14, 16, 22-inch bass, 6.5-inch snare. I wound up acquiring a 18-inch floor tom and then an 8-inch tom, and it was a Pearl MLX series.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I needed. It's like, what else could I get? There's nothing.
Right.
Bought a set of Peisty 2002s and added a little bit here and a little bit there to it. Learning how to play, though, early on was all done by ear. And I always felt that I was kind of falling behind on trying to play by ear, whether it was maybe my hearing wasn't good enough, but I would miss a lot. And then I started to look at notes and like, okay, how do you read this stuff? And, of course, that was a little bit frustrating. I did not learn how to read music early on. And then when I actually did learn how to read it, interpreting how to play it became a completely different story. Looking at a page of drum notation and actually playing it is two different things, as you're probably aware.
Right.
You know, you can't look at that paper and go, okay, I'm supposed to feel this when I'm playing it. We know it don't work that way. You have to play it and then interpret it and then let your emotions take the rest of it. And when I really did learn how to read that music and learn how to visually interpret it and imagine playing it, it was like the movie The Matrix. And all of a sudden, all them numbers start to make sense. Everything that you look at from a quarter note, eighth note, 16th note, where to put a crash in, what to do with the hi-hat, what to do with the snare, even paradiddles that you sit there and you watch people play paradiddles as fast as you can imagine, and it's like, whoa, that'll never happen. But all of a sudden, that one moment in time where you actually understand what you're supposed to be doing all takes effect, and then now you can do it. Now you just need to practice it and get better at it. And
right.
That's kind of the long and the short.
what was some of your drummers that you looked towards then for guidance? You know, what kind of drum were you looking at? Was it Nico, guys like that?
I always wanted to understand how to become good. You hear people talk about break it down, slow it down, play it till you get good at it. But without having somebody that you can look at as a role model or a mentor, and even though we can't pick up the phone and call these people, you can listen to them as many times as you want. So for me, it was really important to actually be able to play a steady beat in time. And of course, we all know who does that really well, and Phil Rudd from AC/DC. So that was an important key player in how do I get to this. AC/DC doesn't have a lot of, you know, really massive fills throughout the song, where Iron Maiden does. Nico McBrain came in just after Clive, and my first concert that I ever seen Iron Maiden was in 1982. I think it was October-ish, just before my birthday. And I don't think Nico was playing with them yet, but all of us were wowed by Iron Maiden because we're talking about that high school time frame of 1980 through 84. Most of us that were in high school together, when we went and saw Iron Maiden, that was our real first experience to see them live. We saw AC/DC before them. Iron Maiden comes up, and who's with Iron Maiden is Judas Priest. So Iron Maiden opened up. We just couldn't understand what we just watched. It was that amazing, and it just blew us away. Judas Priest came on stage, and it just topped the evening. Later on, that's when we started trying to play a little bit together as a band in high school. And then we go back to see Iron Maiden again a couple of years later, and now Nico is playing. But all them drum fills that we've heard, tried to play, there's no way I could do that on the drum set that I had. It just wasn't enough drums. You had to kind of use one drum as a fill-in and kind of go back and forth and come back around, and it never sounded the same. But between Nico, Phil Rudd, and the drummer for Judas Priest, which is Travis Scott, I think.
Well, right now it's Scott Travis, but back then in 82 it was Dave Holland.
Dave Holland, but the one between them, which was Travis.
Scott Travis.
I can't remember.
Scott Travis is in the band since 1990.
Yeah. So the beginning of Judas Priest, though, that Holland, listening to those three, that really brought the interest in of how do I play with these different styles of playing. And that's probably my main set for when it comes to how do I want to put myself out there? How do I want people to see me? And I know we've talked offline about this once before, about when you play, do you want to play like that person does, or do you play to how you are, your version of it? And
right.
I play my version of it as well. I don't try to copy that. I try to copy that idea that they were playing, but I still play it in my own. And then, of course, you know, you have, I don't remember his name, the drummer from Michael Jackson. Elvis Presley had a whole bunch of different drummers, I believe, as well. And I like 50s, 60s music. So a lot of the 50s drummers that played some, I don't want to say simple, but they were solid. And when you listen to that music, it's solid. And that's what I wanted to, you know, try to represent myself as, that I could play it solid. And I'll practice that stuff, the simple beats, to just get the time right. The rest of the stuff, we'll use Run to the Hills, for example. That every other line is, you know, you're going across the toms. And if you don't do that right all the time, nobody will really pick that out. Unless you're off the time. If you're not timing everything perfect, that's what people are going to hear. So that's where I like to sit at, is I want to get my timing down. I practice that all the time. I have routines that I don't really play a double bass, but a double bass pedal. And I'll go through double bass. I'll go through some paradiddles. I'll go through the toms. And I might not play a song for weeks at a time, but I will play bits and parts from a lot of songs as a practice routine. Mm-hmm. One right after the other, try to bring it in. You know, you come out of one groove, go back into that groove, and do it flawlessly, which I can't all the time. And matter of fact, that's a struggle to switch from one to the next and come back around. But
what are we doing these days? Are you playing in bands these days? What are you doing? Anything drumming?
For practicing, I practice as often as I can. If it won't be every day because of regular work where I do have to travel, I'll take a practice pad and a pair of sticks. I'll sit outside. I'll lower my tailgate, bring out my practice pad, start doing a few things. If it's nice out. If it's not nice out, I'll annoy the people in the rooms next to me in a hotel. I like to play for myself. I don't play in a band. I just like to play to a song. It doesn't have to be anyone in particular. If there's something that comes up, I'll try to learn it. And we know that there's a certain amount of beats that are available, a certain amount of routines and techniques and so forth. A good example, here recently, my wife wanted me to learn how to play We're an American Band. So, okay, that's something I'm going through, playing that song from Grand Funk Railroad. And then Golden Earring, Radar Love.
Radar Love. Sure, yeah.
That just another song. It came up on a playlist out of the blue. Just, don't pick a song. Just let the playlist go for that genre. You hear something you like, and that's what I want to play. I want to play it because there's an emotional drive there. I can get into that.
Right.
I want to play this. I'm going to try to play it as good as I can. And then if it really locks in as something interesting, I mean, I'm OCD on it. I just focus in and I will play that until I get it right.
Nice.
The one thing that I like to do is listen to live recordings of all the bands out there from back in the day, because a studio cut is kind of just like, I don't want to say a cheese pizza, because cheese pizza is pretty good on its own, but that's just like a studio version of it. You listen to AC/DC Back in Black, on Back in Black, the album. Well, that's just Back in Black. But then you go into a live recording from a concert, and it's completely different. Just Led Zeppelin, for example. You listen to an album, and then you listen to a live version of that, and now you're thinking to yourself, "Holy cow!" When you listen to John Bonham play, you have a version of the song 16 different times, and you can learn how John Bonham played it on a variety of levels. Sometimes it was a little bit faster, a little bit slower. Sometimes it was something added or taken away, or the feel was completely different. And not ever actually taking a real lesson, which I don't think it doesn't matter what you do with a real lesson, you're not going to learn how to play unless you can feel it. You have to feel it. You have to get into the groove with it. If you're playing just a basic 2-4, and Back in Black is the song of choice, or any AC/DC song, learn how to play it and play it like your life depended on it. If you have to practice it for 3 months straight, 4 hours a day, just do it. And I know a lot of us can't. I can't put that much commitment into it because of work at times and just life and in general. But during Christmas, I decided I was going to try to play some AC/DC and literally spent 2 days, probably 8 hours each day, going through playing Back in Black, Highway to Hell, just wanting to get to where I sounded good at it, or better than what I've done in the past. And I think I accomplished that for the most part, but my real, realization is that when I tried to play AC/DC, You Shook Me All Night Long, there was a connection there that I didn't feel in Back in Black, even though Back in Black's a pretty simple song, I guess you could say. I played You Shook Me All Night Long. That was the only recording I've ever been able to record that came out good, too, by the way. I played it for my wife, and my wife looked at me like, get out of here. I said, you heard me downstairs? Yeah, and so you have to give the commitment that's required if you want to become better. Just like anything else in this world. You want to race cars, you want to jog, you want to run marathons. If you don't run 15 miles a day, how are you going to do a marathon? One of my favorite double bass pedal anything is Judas Priest Painkiller. I will play that, and I will play it and play it and play it, and it sounds really good. And then you kind of have to go away for work. You come back a week later, and it's like, I thought I knew how to play this. Because you're not doing it all the time. You get to a point where you're sufficiently good at that time, and if you don't continue that commitment, if you have to take that break for one reason or the other, you're going to be disappointed, or at least I am, when I come back to it, when I can't do it. My calves hurt. My ankles hurt. I'm not conditioned for it. I'm 54, so 1 week of not doing it is almost like, you know, months of a younger person not doing it at times. I know what I'm supposed to do. I just need to get back to where I can do it.
Yeah. Well, gee, listen, bro, I appreciate you so much coming on tonight and helping us out with the show, man. Just great stuff, you know. Everybody, you know, check out his page on Facebook. I appreciate, man, you come on the show and sharing some of your insight of your life in drums, man.
Mm-hmm. Had a good time.
Good. I'll be in touch with you, bro, on Facebook. But thank you to Gene Novacek. But just have a great night, man, and thanks so much.
But thanks, Joe.
All right, man, you got it.
Keep up the work. All right, you have a good night. Bye-bye.
Gene Novacek, check him out on Facebook. Guys, what can you say? Iron Maiden fan. Been wanting to get Nico for a couple of years, and I thank once again the great Mike Vanderhoof, good friend of mine from YNT. We thank Nico McBrain. We thank Lee Kelly from Hank Williams Jr. for stopping on and giving us a couple of minutes of his insight into Nico. We thank Nico. We thank Gene Novacek. Just a great show. Great interview with Nico. Great insight. Really cool. I just loved it. We touched on so much tonight with Nico. And you love doing that, you know, with those kind of guests. So we thank Nico McBrain and Gene Novacek. Guys, don't forget, we're off next week, as the show is every 2 weeks. We'll be back April 3rd, Sunday night, from 8 to 10, with the great Mike Vanderhoof from YNT. Guys, have a great night, and thanks for 2:30, dedicated to the late, great Paul Carrizo.